This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
You're listening to the Brad and Chad Show here on the Place to Be Nation Network. And now your hosts, Brad Woodling and Chad Campbell. Walking on a dream.
Place to Be Nation, Happy New Year, and welcome to the first Brad and Chad Show. In over 3 years, we are ringing in the new year, and it's just Chad and I. We were going to bring, you know, our old producer, JT Rosero. You know, he's really gone places since we last had the show, you know, Clotheslines and Headlines, and you may have heard of him. But, you know, it is just Chad and I tonight. And we want to, you know, I'm glad you're listening. We're going to be talking through some top, some lists, some rankings, certainly not filings. We're just ranking some of our favorite things from 2016, and I'll get to those in a minute. We're also going to do a little housekeeping and talk about a couple different things that you may have heard me talk about, either through the Place to Be podcast or on Clotheslines and Headlines. So let me bring him in first. Chad, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, Brad. Look forward to 2017. 2016 was, I'd say, all in all, a pretty good year for myself personally.
Now, would you say,
Place
Chad,
to Be overall?
Yeah, I think it was a great year for Place to Be Nation. Well, you know, not that I like to get into the numbers too often, but, you know, we had a nice 15% boost year over year. It's always great to see that type of growth. You know, maybe you watch Shark Tank or those shows. You know, those type of incremental things, they add up over time. And, Chad, 2016 was a big year for you. Because you told me you watched, not just tracked, you watched, you think, how many matches this past year?
I would say I'm around 3,000.
Yeah.
I started a spreadsheet. So 2016 is kind of a weird year for me overall, because this time last year, is right around this point last year, Brad, mm-hmm. when I went to the Barnesville WrestleAmerica show, which had the AJ Styles kind of bait and switch. Mm-hmm. Where he's supposed to wrestle Rave in a singles match. They went 3 minutes, went to a tag. The tag match was good. That was a good match. But it was one of those weird things where, you know, I was about an hour and 15 minutes away to my house that night. And as I was driving home, it was kind of one of those weird dilemmas where, I mean, of course, I enjoyed the match, but I still felt unsatisfied. And that really kind of cultivated the first quarter of the year, where I was watching some stuff here or there, but was pretty checked out of wrestling, up to the point where on the day of WrestleMania 32, I was boarding a cruise
mm-hmm.
and left my phone turned off for a week, so I didn't know who won WrestleMania. Went spoiler free a week later, which was the first time I hadn't watched WrestleMania live in 15 years. I think WrestleMania 13 was the last one. So that's kind of where I was at. I was in the doldrums, but then I decided to watch the WWN live shows from that weekend, from WrestleMania weekend, and that just sort of kind of rejuvenated me. And as I kept discovering stuff throughout 2016, I got more into it. So from the end of April onward, I was pretty much chugging along at a pretty good clip of 2016 footage. Decided to start tracking at the 1st of June, and since the 1st of June, like June 7th, when I started the day, and watched 1,900 matches since then. Mm. So that's where I kind of get my guesstimate of around 3,000 matches overall for the entire year.
Yeah, that's really impressive. And, you know, I'm going to plug it here, too. After that show in Barnesville, you wrote a very poignant article that got a lot of praise amongst the wrestling Twitter universe and maybe within our bubble, as people are wont to say. And it kind of talked about how you felt checked out in a way, and kind of questioned your fandom. It was a really good piece. I'll try to throw it in the notes here so folks can go back and find it. Although I guess you probably didn't write anything else for Place to Be Nation this year, so maybe they just find your archive. It should be the last article on there.
Wow. I wrote my Osprey article, Brad.
You know, I thought you did, and I was going to tweet and plug that one too. I thought I could have sworn it did. It didn't do quite the numbers we would have hoped it did because it wasn't WWF. And that's a shame. But I'm going to put the Ospreay one in there too. They were both very good. And of course, I kid. But that was a great article though, and it's interesting that it took a full cruise and you probably not watching WrestleMania that cleansed your palate, and that was a good thing because, I mean, it was an impressive. I've seen the spreadsheet. I've referenced it myself after I've watched shows to go back and see, and you and I are usually pretty close, I would say, you know, maybe within like a half star or so. It's rare when we're, you know, pretty far apart on anything with that. I think we look for the same type of things and enjoy the same type of wrestling. So, yeah, that's a really impressive feat. So what we're going to get into tonight, folks, is Chad is going to give, in his 3,000 matches here, Chad's going to give his top five breakouts and his top 10 workers, and I'm going to facilitate those lists, and I'm going to give my top 10 wrestlers, and really what it is people that I seek out matches for, because in my 2016 was the first year ever I watched the least amount of WWE in, man, it goes back to my last break, so either 2007, and then before that, 2004, where I'm talking like I watched the last 5 minutes of SummerSlam. I didn't watch any of the NXT shows. I watched the AJ Styles main events. We'll get to that later on, you know, after Mania. But Mania and the booking and a lot of the kind of realization around, you know, this is how we book and this is how we tell stories. And if you're not happy with it, you know, you find something that you want to watch. And, you know, I've actually spent – I watched every Ring of Honor TV and every pay-per-view and a good number of their house shows, not as many as you did, which is impressive this year. So that was kind of where, you know, in writing too, a lot of my writing reflected in on that, or when I was on Clotheslines and Headlines kind of was around Ring of Honor. But there's a whole bunch of other promotions that we'll talk to that I seeked out, and a lot more individual matches as things became really readily available in 2016. But before we get to those lists, I do want to talk you know, way back on the Place to Be podcast, I came on and talked about the Sheedy Awards through our friends Les and Hugh at Sheet Sandwich and Talking Sheet, the podcast, and Celia Bloom as well, who's on that show. And I talked about our nominations, and we had we were nominated in a couple different categories. And remember, last year we had won the Best Podcast Network. We had thoroughly smashed MLW and some of our other contemporaries. It was a very proud moment for the site. So this year we were nominated again. It was steep competition, and the turnout this year was four times as many votes. It got some mainstream populism, if you will, on Reddit and whatnot, which is great exposure. I told this to Hugh. I said, you know, I'm happy for Sheet Sandwich that lessen them. I mean, they do fantastic work. It's one of the smartest pods you'll listen to. And they got a lot of exposure out of it. And with that came in, you know, a lot of people that may not be as familiar with our network. So while I like to think that they saw the name on there and maybe they seeked it out, we tied for second. We came in, MLW got 30%. Of the votes to finish first. We got 26% in tying with Voices of Wrestling. I think I got that right from my inside sources. That's what the numbers were. So we just missed out. So if you didn't vote and you thought about it and you missed the 20 times I reminded people, although I did not stomp our politic, you could be the reason why we didn't finish first. So that will live with you for the next year. But still, you know, to be still in this with all that more votes to still finish second. And we were tied with Voices of Wrestling for a second. I certainly want to put over our friends there and the work we partner with them on a bunch of different things that we'll get to later. It's nice that even with that boost in that Place to Be Nation and our different feeds, the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed and the Pro Wrestling Only feed, where we're recognized, this is just wrestling only, I'm not leaving the pop kids at the curb. We're respected and as we were there. So that was great. And a couple other different things. Well, you know, Between the Sheets, which the calendar year of the Sheeties fell into where Between the Sheets was still on the Pro Wrestling Only feed. Of course, you can still find the show at Place to Be Nation. Between the Sheets did win Podcast of the Year, which is a great accomplishment for Chris and Bix. And I was happy to see that too. It certainly is huge ties to Place to Be Nation. So I want to put them over with a deserved win there. The previous year they had only been around for half a year and they came in second to Chris's other show, Exile, this year with another full year under their belt. And their Patreon was in bonus episodes. They were certainly a worthy contender and was happy to see that they won Best Show. And then some of our other ones we had was Best Voice. Johnny Cerro finished second, so much respect to Johnny anchoring on the
pro wrestling only feed, of course, with Titans of Wrestling, and he does some other work with us with Imaginary Stories, and he does every reaction show, and always carries a buzz with him there. So look, literally, quite literally, and so Johnny finishing second, so that was great. Did I miss any of our other folks, John?
I think that was it. I mean, I know Zellner was best host.
Oh, good. I wasn't positive. I can't remember. Our friend Justin and Scott did not make the final nominations. This was not a shoo-in to get nominated. You have to have quite a few votes to even get to the nomination stage. So that's great that Chris – I think that's back-to-back for him.
Yeah, I don't – no, I don't think he won. I think he came in second this year.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It was interesting to watch those results because it was that type of thing. I think it's kind of a similar situation you saw with the Voices of Wrestling Match of the Year poll, where you've seen it go from four people, I think, in 2012 to I participated in it in 2013, the calendar year, and it was about 30 of us. And then 2014, there's about 70 mm-hmm. of us. And then last year, over 100 or right around 100. So it when stuff keeps growing and growing like that, I mean, that, you know, we make no qualms that the Meltzers, the MLWs, those are the big boys in the playground, sure, so to speak. Sure. So
and to crib a line from our friend Parv, you know, it's nice to just even be considered a competitor or a contemporary of someone like MLW and the shows they have. I like to think that, well, you know, they added Ric Flair, so. So really, I mean, we in 2016 competed with Ric Flair, and he barely beat Place to Be Nation. So you're talking about, like, you know, flirting with greatness out there. It was Ric Flair that put them over the top against us, which is, again, quite an accomplishment. So, well, great. And I will be listening to that whole episode. I know our friends at Talking Sheet are listening, and it's been they released it on Christmas. Always a I think back to, Chad, when you and I were releasing that Goodwill Wrestling show with Rob Naylor and the guy from Primus.
Rancid.
Rancid, I'm sorry.
Yeah, Lars Frederick.
Lars. Yeah. He's not listening, but I wish him the best. But I just remember that we released that on because that was our Christmas present from Will to everybody. And it was just, you know, we're trying to get it uploaded to SoundCloud, had issues, and nobody listened to it that day anyway. So then I laughed when the Sheeties came out on Christmas night, and I you know, it's a week later, and I've had some time off from work, so I haven't been able to really churn through it yet. But I will be definitely listening to that one, and you know, you'll hear more from Hugh. I nominated him for best guest. He was on Clotheslines and Headlines, and he's going to be returning to Clotheslines and Headlines in the new year here. He's already reached out to us, and we're excited to have him back. He's a big fan of the site and our different shows, so I'm looking forward to listening to that one with our friends over there. All right. So with that said, again, we are ranking, but certainly not filing, because there is another show, a rank and file show, with our friends Jordan Duncan, Steve Willey, and Glenn Butler, where they ranked their top 10 favorite wrestlers of the past year and talked about the differences year over year. And I would certainly encourage you to seek that out at placetobenation.com. So we're just going to be ranking here. And so what I wanted to do before we get into our big list, Chad, let's talk about your top five breakouts. And if you will, I'll give you a number. Go ahead and give number five.
So let me just give a quick caveat. These are individuals that I think are going to have really strong 2017s. Okay. And in this list, you know, it's kind of tough to say, like, you know, who's going to be a breakout or something. Because if you're a Ring of Honor exclusive fan, somebody like Marty Scurll could be your breakout.
Sure.
You know, because you've never seen him. He came in, he won the TV title. It's like, oh, all of a sudden, this guy looks like a star. So when I give the five names, I'm interested. I bet there's a couple probably you have not heard of, Brad.
We'll see. It'll be a good litmus test.
But so I just want to give that caveat. I'm not trying to present a list where I say, ooh, you know, oh, this guy thinks he can really pure this obscure name. But I'll explain with each one of the five how I think they will kind of proceed in the wrestling business in the upcoming year. So my number five is Takiro Yamamura.
And where can folks find Mr. Yamamura?
Mr. Yamamura is in Dragon Gate. Now, Dragon Gate is, I would say, the promotion right now that's the most flush with young talent. They have just a crop of guys under 25 that look like really strong prospects, from Big R Shimizu to L Lindemann, who have gotten a good bit of push. And I would think if you hear like a blue chip prospect in Japanese wrestling, the person people would point to the most is a guy that goes by the name of Ben K.
Yep, heard of him.
Yeah, so he's got a lot of buzz, and I want to preference this by saying, you know, if you had to say right now, like, who is going to be the biggest star in Dragon Gate in 10 years, I would pick Ben K. But I picked Yamamura, and he was in the 2015 class with Kaito Ishida, and they're in the Overgeneration faction with Shima, and got a apprenticeship under Shima and Gamma in the Overgeneration faction. But they were very kind of nondescript, bland, I would say, underneath talent for most of the year. And Yamamura especially looked like he was behind Ishida for a lot of the year. And then in the last month, December in Dragon Gate, you had the 5-on-5 match of the veterans versus the young guys, which Yamamura and Ishida aren't even considered part of those five. But that match in December, early December, was excellent. And then really at the final gate, pay-per-view, which is one of the five biggest Dragon Gate shows of the year, Ishida and Yamamura had a match where they faced Don Fuji and Masaki Mochizuki, which are two of the most grumpiest established names in Dragon Gate. And I thought that really showed more personality from Yamamura than I'd seen from him throughout his entire career up to that point.
Okay.
And was really interesting. And it made me really optimistic for him in 2017, where I think we're at a point in Dragon Gate where there's certainly going to be a lot of faction shifting upcoming, where I expect to see a lot of alignments changing and stuff of that nature. And I think Yamamura will probably split from Ishida in the upcoming year, and I look forward to what he'll do, and I expect him to be kind of challenging for their Open the Break Gate title by this point next year, which is kind of their like Young Lions title, but it's an important title.
Okay.
In their lexicon. It's something where, you know, if you win that title right now, it's with Ida, who's another young guy, but it's if you gain that title and start gaining challenges for that title, you're kind of on the road to becoming a star within the promotion. So that's my number five, Takahiro Yamamura.
All right. And where does one find Dragon Gate matches? Do they have a...
So...
Go ahead.
Okay, so there's two ways. There is Nico Nico, which is a legal way to get Dragon Gate matches. Now, I will be, you know, forthright and say that Nico Nico does not like my credit card.
Okay.
Basically, you have to buy Smiley points. You know, like 25,000 Smiley points, whatever. Basically, their big five pay-per-views or their huge shows are about $25 a pop.
Wow.
To watch live. And then they do stream all their Corkins, which are really strong shows, generally for about 15. So that's more reasonable. But yeah, so Nico Nico did decline my credit card when I tried for Kobe World. So, I mean, I'm not gaining a new credit card to watch Dragon Gate. So the other alternative is the Real Hero Archive, which you can watch. Those shows are generally put on a few days after the event takes place.
There you go. All right, cool. Who do you have at number four?
My number four is Paul Robinson. Have you ever heard of him?
He does not ring a bell.
So he is a British worker. He's in the tag team Swords of Essex with Will Ospreay.
Okay.
But he is a great heel. That's what he excels in my mind as a heel. He wears jeans. He's a real small guy. He's one of those guys that like it seems like every group has this friend that's like a little runt, but he's got the loudest mouth. And you know, you secretly don't want to cross that guy, even though you know he's like 5'7", 160 pounds. Just the way he projects himself, he comes off as a badass. That's Paul Robinson. And I just think he'll have a lot of opportunities going forward because, as you've seen with Progress, you know, Marty Scurll's kind of now with Ring of Honor, mostly they get priority on his booking. Same with Will Ospreay. You got this WWE integration with their British title, which has some other workers like Pete Dunne in the mix. You have the World of Sport and the Work Culture. So there's a lot of kind of groups that are gunning for talent, so to speak. And I think with some of the other more prominent heels kind of going away or doing other opportunities, that allows somebody like Robinson to really rise up the ranks. I think he's very underappreciated. I almost picked Zach Gibson in this spot, but I again thought he was a little too well-known. But yeah, Zach Gibson and Paul Robinson to me are the two absolute heels that if I was, you know, wanting to get some talent in a British startup promotion, those are the two guys I would go to right away.
And that's the very definition of a breakout, right? You know, you got to be the next man up there. You know, those guys leave and it's time for somebody else. So that's all right. Very cool. Let's go to number three.
Number three is a Joshi worker, Chihiro Hashimoto. She is 24 years old. Let me look real quick on Cage Match and see. So Cage Match has her at 52 matches total.
Oh, wow.
And her first match was October 2015. But she is the current Sendai Girls champion, which is, you know, probably maybe the third or fourth biggest Joshi promotion currently.
Okay.
It's up there with like the Oz Academy and maybe the Waves of the world. And she had a match where she defeated Miko Satomura, mm-hmm. The legend for the title in October. And that really made me take notice of her. And then in the November Sendai Girls show at Cork, and she defeated Cassandra Miyagi. And both of those were just like really young female wrestlers. They both seemed very hungry. And it was just kind of impressive to see Chihiro Hashimoto. She kind of has a thicker frame, but she really mixes in kind of the technical work with the wrestling. Also has some very powerful throws, so I'm really excited about her in the future. She kind of checks all the boxes for me and a wrestler, and has some charisma on top of that. So I think she'll be kind of that next Joshi star. If again, much like in the British situation with Paul Robinson, if the rumors are true and Io Shirai and some of the other stardom talent leaves for WWE, I think Chihiro is someone that you could plug right in and not skip much of a beat with.
Wow, okay. And is that Joshi available in the same archive you referenced before?
Yes. Now, now she doesn't work for Stardom. You know, Stardom has their own system, so she you don't have to worry about that with Stardom World. She does have some Wave matches, which I don't know if they're on the Wave service or not. But the other stuff with the Sendai Girls and also a couple of our matches with Oz Academy is on the Real Hero archive.
All right.
But she's probably only had like 7 or 8 matches so far that made tape. So really fresh. I mean,
so the bandwagon, there's not a lot. I mean, now is the time.
Yeah.
You can catch up pretty quick. Jump right on.
Yeah.
Exactly. Tweet around the chat. I have seen you tweeting with maybe it was Lawrence or somebody else about her of late, so I kind of thought that one was coming. So
yeah, there you go. My number two, And this was somebody that I really went back and forth on what to do. I wanted to pick one of the CWF Mid-Atlantic guys.
Okay, sure.
And there's a couple. Chet Sterling is somebody I think for sure could be a breakout star. Even like Eric Royal, I think, could get his name out more. But I ended up going with Nick Richards, who's kind of like the homegrown brawler type for them. And I just think he has like a really cool look. He doesn't work almost anywhere else outside of CWF Mid-Atlantic that makes tape. So it really feels like somebody that I would like to see in like a Nova Pro or a NWA Smoky Mountain, or, you know, if he was a Scenic City Invitational combatant, I think that would be a lot of fun. And he's kind of like became your sympathetic baby face for the promotion, to where I feel like, you know, I don't know what the future holds, but if I had to peg it right now of someone that will defeat Trevor Lee for his title, I would pick Nick Richards.
Nick Richards, okay.
Nick Richards. I think he I just think he has kind of that homegrown feel, but also can brawl, can wrestle, can do a great dramatic match. If there's one match to watch from him, I would recommend the Weaver Cup final, where he defeated Eric Royal. It's on one of the CWF Mid-Atlantic Worldwide episodes that you can find all of those on YouTube.
Yep, for free.
Which is great. But yeah, this one is a 25-30 minute match, just a super match. I got it at 4.25 stars.
Wow.
Really dramatic, excellent match. With Royal as a great heel and Richards as a sympathetic baby face, it escalates to some sickening spots. And I just think he's kind of a great guy that entered, you know. So there's a lot of buzz around like Darby Allin.
Yes.
And he certainly takes some nutty bumps. I think Richards has that ability to do those kind of type of hardcore matches or take some sick bumps. But I find he has more charisma and also is able to build a better story within a match than Darby right now. So that's why I would pick somebody like Nick Richards over Darby Allin.
That's a great pick, and I am sure our friends, Grant Sawyer and of course, Brad Stutz, will share this around with them, you know, and CWF. We're going to talk a little bit more about them later on, I'm positive, with a gentleman you mentioned already, Trevor Lee. But all their shows, they are on YouTube. You know, when they film, to my knowledge, when they do events, they all get broken up into eventually being part of their kind of weekly series. And I do think it airs like pretty late at like one of the local stations there in North Carolina, which I think is just cool that they get to, that they can put that together and put that out. It's if you haven't heard of them, you know, there's certainly been a lot of buzz around their TV show being arguably the best of 2016, and a lot of people that we associate with, John Filipovich. Geez, sorry, my lips are getting numb here. And Chris Zellner had both voted for them, and Pete, I believe, did as well. In the Observer Awards, had voted for them for best TV show of the year. So I mean, that's pretty high praise. Maybe you're slightly tiring of Raw. You know, this is every Wednesday night, which can be pretty busy night for TV, but again, it's on YouTube, you know, so you can find that out. I definitely would recommend that. And I think Chet Sterling, he may have had a picture with John. I know they just came off of their Battlecade program as we were recording this, so a lot of buzz still there. So that's a Nick Richards, that's a 4.25 match tease too to seek out. So we'll embed that one in the post for everybody if you can remember what episode it was, or I'll ask those guys. We're friendly with them, so I can ask them which one it was, and we'll get the word out. If you want to hear more about CWF Mid-Atlantic 2, the This Week in Wrestling Indian and International versions with Pete and Timothy, they review the latest from CWF every week, and that gets a lot of buzz within the CWF community also. Right. So it's nice that we're kind of giving their support there too. So good pick there. All right, let's do number one breakout.
Number one, and this is the guy that if I had to pick one, he's my number one. He's somebody I think by this time next year, I can honestly see people saying he may be the wrestler of the year in 2017, and that's Sammy Guevara.
Oh, nice, yeah.
I am just, to me, he has it all. He has the charisma, just an incredible heel, has breathtaking moves. Honestly, he feels this will be contentious, mm-hmm. Especially when I do my top 10 wrestlers. But he sometimes to me he feels like Will Ospreay, but with a better character.
Wow. Okay.
I'd watched a few matches here and there, like when he's had these showcases and FIP. Mm-hmm. And whatnot, and I'd heard Joe Lanza from Voices of Wrestling talk about him when they did the Inspire interview series a couple years back. But, you know, with tape availability, just wasn't somebody I really seeked out. And it really took Pete from Titans of Wrestling to kind of turn me on to the guy.
Yeah.
And then the Ray Road match, yep, from Fade to Black 2 was an excellent match, which you liken to Shawn Michaels' Hell in the Cell 1997 performance.
I did.
Which I thought was spot on.
Thank you.
I really enjoyed the Colt Cabana match from Wrestle Circus. He also has the Prince Mustafa Ali match from Wrestle Circus. I enjoyed his Cody Rhodes match greatly. So he's just somebody that right now, every time out, I am enjoying his performances more and more. He's getting an opportunity with the Style Battle.
Yep, he is.
In January. I expect him and hope he goes far in that tournament. I'd like for him to win it, but at least to get a showcase out there, and hopefully that'll get him more bookings within the WWN universe. And I think, you know, kind of how like Keith Lee is somebody that not many people had really heard of till this past year, but... Mm-hmm. Through his stuff with Beyond, and also he's somebody that's been on the Texas Indies for a while, but now through his stuff with Beyond Wrestling and the Ring of Honor feud with War Machine, he's gotten a lot more notoriety, and that's kind of where the level I see Guevara at this point next year, or maybe even above that.
Yeah, that's a great pick. In the last couple of those matches, those Wrestle Circus ones are out on YouTube, and so is the Cody Rhodes match, I think, is on YouTube, right? I have it on my to-watch list
in
the next coming days. He's a, in the matches that I've seen of him, and I've seen that Ray Rowe match, is, you know, he plays a cocky dickhead heel he's not undersized, but, you know, maybe a little bit shorter, but real athletic, and just a real, like, genuine heel that has flashy spots, which I know kind of contradicts how one thinks maybe a heel needs to be. But, man, you know, and that dynamic, like the Shawn Michaels Hell in a Cell thing was because, you know, Ray Rowe's a big dude. And it's kind of rare when you see, like, you know, the big monster is the baby face, and he's just beating the shit. And Sammy's taking some crazy, you know, bumps outside the ring before the match even starts. And it really a fantastic performance. I was at 4.25 easy on that match. That was an Inspire match, really good match. And you can just tell that guy oozes charisma. And now that, you know, if you're a Flow Slam subscriber or you're Stephen Graham, who's really into Style Battle, we may have some coverage of that on Place to Be Nation coming up, as you're going to see Sammy more in the future. So that's a great number one pick here to lead us out of that. So nice work.
Thank you. So that's my five. Really excited about seeing all those guys upcoming in the year, and girls with Chihiro.
Yeah. All right. So now let's get to this is the main event, which is Chad Campbell's top 10 workers of 2016. And while I'm going to facilitate that discussion and know those guys, I'm going to be also working in my top 10 wrestlers, which is quote unquote people that I seek out, like Sammy, who's not on my list, but a guy like that where it's like, oh, I hear that name, I'm like, I want to see his match, right? And so we're going to talk about a whole bunch of different guys there. Let me ask you first, we'll alternate, even though we have different scopes to this, but did you have any honorable mentions that you wanted to talk about before you get to the top 10?
Oh, man. About 10 more honorable mentions. I'll just name a couple that I think some people might be surprised.
Yeah.
First, I'll apologize to Stephen Graham. I'll just go out and say there's no Lucha on my list. Excuse me. The top luchador I had this year was Rush.
Okay.
I thought Lucha in 2016 overall was kind of a weird year. Or if you look at my top matches of the year, there's tons of Lucha kind of interspersed in there. But like Trauma versus Conus Lupus is my match of the year.
And Trauma, Stephen Graham's also. And that match is on YouTube.
Yes. And Trauma had Trauma had some good performances, but IWRG was pretty inconsistent throughout the year, so I couldn't justify him as top 10. But a Rush, I mean, he had the LA Park series. He had a really fun match with Rey Buccaneero from the Day of the Dead show from CMLL, which had a really cool atmosphere. And then he also had the Maximo match. So a lot of good stuff. Just didn't quite make it. Zach Gibson, who I mentioned earlier, also didn't make it. And then I think the the two big guys from New Japan that people might think, both Kazuchika Okada or Tetsuya Naito, neither one of those made it as well, but they are both honorable mentions for me.
Okay. I have a couple honorable mentions myself. One is a luchador. That's Dragon Lee. He did make it. We did. We watched that match for the Match of the Week Club, and then of course he was brought into Ring of Honor for the match with Kamitachi, which I thought, you know, I haven't seen their one from New Japan, although I know it was, you know, considered better. I thought their match for Ring of Honor was a pretty great showcase of two guys just flipping around. They actually did some pretty cool stuff with the crowd and outside the ring that I thought was pretty innovative for what you see at a Ring of Honor show. It's probably rightfully overshadowed by the Ladder War main event, but it's actually a pretty good, lived up to expectations for me. And then I had a chance to, of course, Dragon Lee at Final Battle, and then I had a chance to see him in person. And so he was definitely a guy that I hear that name, and I'm like, I want to check that guy out. We watched his match against who was it in that main event that we watched for CMLL?
La Máscara,
right. And so, and I thought that match was really good. I think it was right at like four for that. Yeah. So, I thought he was really good.
And Máscara is a really limited worker, so that was impressive at Dragon Lee.
Yeah. And another guy I have is Speedball Mike Bailey on my honorable mention list. Another guy that where, you know, I kind of, again, I see his name and I'm like, ooh, you know, I want to check out what he's been up to. And I've caught him in PWG, and of course, you know, if you don't know, he's, you know, had visa issues, so he hasn't been back in the States this year, similar to Kenny Omega, I guess. And so you can catch him on Smash Wrestling, and then we did a review of him when he was over in DDT, was it that he did that?
Yes. DDT. Yeah, DNT, the DNA.
Yeah, and I just like his act in general. I mean, and he gets bonus points for absolutely looking like Aaron George. I mean, spitting image. Like, I can't ever undo that. When I see him, I'm like, wow, Aaron's wrestling Adam Cole in PWG tonight. And, you know, he does really cool kicks. And I really like his offense. And honestly, I think he's a great wrestler. I think he brings guys up to him. I don't think he has boring matches at all. And he's a guy I really like.
Yeah, he's really big in DDT, actually. Seems like he's going to be their top gaijin going forward, tag champion right now and everything. So,
wow, okay.
Seems like they have really big plans for him and starting up the DDT Universe service in January, the streaming service.
Right, yep, they are going to streaming. That's something to look for with Speedball Mike Bailey. And my other honorable mention is Leo Rush, who is my Ring of Honor TV Worker of the Year in 2016, his rookie year. So to speak, I mean, I guess he had a couple of matches last year. Well, he worked last year, but I mean, in Ring of Honor, he came in and won the Top Prospect Tournament. You know, has a had a 4-star match there. He had a 4.25 match with Jay Lethal, which was great, and main event of TV shows against the Briscoes. And I think that overall, like, he had a lot of quality over a large number of kind of big matches on ROH TV over the years. So he was a guy that didn't make my top 10 faves, but a guy that I definitely enjoy watching.
Yeah, he was my honorable mention too. He'll be in my top 20 when I probably submit a ballot. I'll also say his CCW work is very impressive. It's kind of a dark heel that he playing a really different character from the one he does in ROH, and it really works. He's able to portray both.
Yeah, that's a really that's absolutely right, and it's cool to be able to do both of those at such a young age too, and be really good at it. I've seen some of the CCW stuff, just highlights maybe, you know, some of the insane bumps that Joey Janela and him did. And CCW you can check out. Yeah, they have their own kind of service too, and I know that you can get them through High Spots. But you kind of follow that. Where do you watch those? If folks want to check it out.
Yeah, for CCW, to be honest, I'd recommend High Spots.
Okay.
Just because, I mean, they had Cage of Death up there.
It was really quick.
Yeah, really quick. Maybe a week or two.
Yeah.
Felt like it wasn't long at all when I was able to watch that show, and he had a good match, really good match with Sami Callihan.
Yeah, that's a big match, those two guys, you know. So if you took advantage of the promo code when we partnered at Place to Be Nation with High Spots earlier this year, you can check out that match there. So that's cool. All right, so moving on. So I had a couple big names that didn't make mine. Okada didn't make mine either. Naito did. But so there's some other big names. It's just really a matter of me just kind of not seeing enough of yet to make my list. But let's go with our number 10s. I'm going to let you go first, and then we'll go from there.
Okay. My number 10 is Drew Gulak. I assume you didn't have him.
No, but I did greatly enjoy, of course, you can see him on, with WWE now. And I did really enjoy the Quackenbush Chikara kind of encore they did.
Yeah, so as I spoke at the beginning of this podcast, Evolve honestly had a good deserves a good bit of credit of getting me back into wrestling in April and May, and I thought the shows for the first half of the year with Evolve were just spectacular, and the Catch Point faction in particular around that time I just loved because they all like worked the best against each other.
Mm-hmm.
Which was really unique for a faction, but it also wasn't like they were feuding within the faction. It was just, kind of like you're seeing some sparring session, but actually on the show where they each had a competitive edge to be the best. And it was really a concept that I greatly enjoyed. And in contrast, I'm kind of saddened with what's happened at the end of the year with Dickinson and Jaka now on the team. But so Gulak had just some spectacular matches throughout this year. To me, the best match he had was versus Hot Sauce Tracy Williams. I think that's Evolve 61. I can check really quick. Now, that match is one that I feel like I'm the highest person in the world on.
Okay.
Because I have it a 4.75.
That's a strong rating. I remember you talking about that with our crew.
It is Evolve 61, and to me that was just a match that was like, and that was a qualifier for the Cruiserweight Classic, actually. And that was just a 16-minute grapple fest that never felt like it had a wasted motion. Always felt like they were going towards a finish. It wasn't kind of masturbatory mat work in my eyes. And it really felt like a succession from like the ring stuff of the late 90s. With Kiyoshi Tamura, so I just greatly enjoyed the work of that match. Some of his other standouts, he had the match with Zack Sabre, both the sprint that he had in the Cruiserweight Classic, which a lot of people greatly enjoyed, and also the long style match they had at Evolve that I know I'm actually a little lower than some people on that match, but I still went 4 stars with that. And his series with Timothy Thatcher, the title matches were a little disappointing, but once he they had that match at Lemmy, which I think is an underrated gem in PWG.
Yep, I was at 4 stars for that.
Right, and I also really enjoyed kind of their brawl with the ring tore up or whatever you want to call it from the Joey Styles, the infamous Joey Styles show. That's Evolve 72. So Fat Thatcher, Gulak had a lot of interesting stuff throughout the year. A couple quick more matches. He had a match with Matt Fitchett from AAW and Homecoming, which was a really strong technical style match, and then a match with Fred Yehi, also from Evolve early in the year. So he kind of tailed off a little bit, and I also want to mention the Quackenbush match, which I think I just loved that match. I thought that felt like a really special match to a degree, and I guess we'll keep kayfabe alive, but Thatcher and his other gimmicks was pretty enjoyable, too, which I've watched throughout a lot of Chikara this year, and he excelled in that gimmick as well. So Thatcher is my number 10, great technician.
Well, Gulak's your number 10.
Why do I keep saying Thatcher? I keep saying Thatcher versus Gulak.
Yep.
Thank you, bro.
No problem.
Gulak's my number 10. I think it'll be a great mechanic for WWE. Somebody that I really hope they know how to utilize, but I'm scared they kind of won't. But kudos to him for getting the opportunity.
Absolutely. That's a guy that's been on the indie scene for quite some time. So it's great to see that that he got the call there, too. All right, very good.
Right.
And I'm sure we'll get to Timothy Thatcher later with you, so then you can talk. And both of them have kayfabe other gimmicks there, so or did at one time. But so my number 10 is, and again, you know, I followed Ring of Honor the closest this year, so I went with a tie for number 10, which is what I call the Jordan Duncan rule of getting as many people as possible on the card and be able to talk about. So I went with Jay Lethal and Adam Cole splitting at number 10 because, you know, when I look at shows that I want to buy on pay-per-view, right? And look, this is the Ring of Honor model, okay? It's different than, you know, these streaming services out there for now. And, you know, they bank on, here's 8 weeks of TV, and every 2 months we want you to give us $35 or $17 a month to watch this supercard of matches you're not going to see on TV. And so within that model, you know, If the title match, which both of these guys are in throughout the year, is what you know, is something that strikes my interest, see, that's always going to kind of be like the driving buy, right? So first, I thought that Lethal had I still need to watch, particularly these two, their match from London. I think it was London. I need to watch that match still. I've heard it's very good. I've seen people have it in like their top three for the year from Ring of Honor. They liked it more than the title change. But Lethal was probably my MVP for the year. You know, he did a very slow burn heel turn into kind of that gatekeeper babyface with the company, and that's what he's going to be doing for the next couple years with them. And we kind of saw that starting with Cody Rhodes, and we'll see that through the spring, I guess. I thought his work on the mic was amazing. You know, they moved him off of Truth then, which is, you know, I like him better as a heel, but I still thought that he brought it and was really an entertaining character. So that's why he got to slide in my number 10. And then conversely, Adam Cole, who I think is quite arguably the best promo in wrestling the past year. I mean, you know, you could say what you want about Ring of Honor, but honestly, I mean, they have those two guys alone are, I would say, probably better than, we're right up there with anybody in the WWE when it comes to being able to cut promos. And Cole was really, really good. And, you know, he was able to build this character where he could take losses, like on TV to Matt Sydal, or, you know, originally losing the Kyle O'Reilly feud, and then be able to kind of reinvent himself with the Bullet Club stuff to come back as a heel and kind of still be fresh, and then to be able to kind of build to winning the title, which we talked about together on Clotheslines and Headlines. We kind of saw that happening in August, and it did. And then to be able to kind of build up O'Reilly enough to beat him and take the belt from him. And he did it really all with his mouth. I mean, I wouldn't say that he's a great worker. His matches usually resonate in like the 3.5 tops range for me, although I did think that the Lethal Cold title change was like 4, 4.25. I think it was better on second watch. I didn't like Lethal's performance initially as much as other people did. I was more like 3.5, and then I rewatched it, and maybe I Johnny Logic'd a whole lot of different things, but then I kind of started filtering in different ideas with it and liked it a little bit more. So those two guys tied in at my number 10. So who's your number 9?
My number 9 is Will Ospreay.
Oh, young William clocking in at number 9.
Oh, God. Ospreay is so tough because he's somebody that's just sort of fascinating to me, and I keep putting my finger on it, and I feel like in some ways I excuse him too much just based off his athleticism, but then I think about like the individual matches and some of the stuff he's put out this year, and I'm like, yeah, I mean, he's got a rank on my list. It's he's kind of perplexing in that way, but I did a quick look because I was kind of interested, and he wrestled, according to Cage Match, 146 matches in 2016. Wow. So he was active a lot, and he has a lot of different stuff that's great and excessive. It starts out with the Marty Scurll match at High Stakes from Revolution Pro. That's just a completely nutty match. God, I just don't know what to say about Ospreay. It's kind of, You're getting amazing athleticism. I do think at times you get some great story. And since he's my number nine, I'll pick out the matches where I think he excelled with that. Mm-hmm. First is the Kushida match from Invasion Attack. That's one you recently just watched, Brad.
Is that the first or the second encounter they had?
That is his first match in New Japan, period.
Oh, okay. That is Invasion. Okay, yeah, I watched that one. That's the last match I watched in 2016.
Yes, so that I think was just a great debut for him, an excellent match. Where he did sell his arm damage completely. Yeah, and worked that really well. I will mention a couple of his showcases matches. I mean, you got the PWG five-star match that he was prominent in. You have the match where he teams with Marty Scurll versus the Young Bucks on the Ring of Honor Tour. You have the Triple Threat from Final Battle, which is a showcase for any match. Yep. And then also the WWN Super Show main event, the six-man, where he's interacting with Kota Ibushi. So those are all kind of like showcase performances. The match with Ricochet is now an infamous kind of match in New Japan. I thought that had the dumb spot that Vader lost his shit over. But beyond that was actually an excellent match. I went 4.5 on that match. Mm-hmm. I thought it was great.
Yep, me too.
Incredibly exciting, had a lot of psychology. Then you had the Best of the Super Junior Final versus Taguchi, which was a match I'm really, really high on, too. That's another one, kind of like the Gulak-Tracy Williams match, where I may be the highest man in the world on it, but I'm at 4.75 on that one also. It'll be in my top 10 for the year for sure, top 5 right now. So I love that match as well. And then kind of his summer is a little weird because he challenges Kushida again. They had another really good match. That one I had right at 4 stars, kind of really close between 3.75 and 4 stars, but I gave it the edge. Had some fun stuff that I just recently watched from Over the Top promotion in Ireland, where he's teaming with Ryan Smile. I thought that was interesting. And then he also had the match versus Zack Sabre Jr. in Progress, which I thought was their best match together with him and Sabre. But the one match from the summer that I really wanted to speak on was the Shane Strickland match from Progress. Now, they had a match in the first round of the 16 Karat for WXW, which was another one of those showcase-type matches. It's a fun match. But it's also one of those matches where they do this really intricate dance spot in the beginning, and it's kind of a roll your eye match. Like, you have to be in the mood for that. So in this match, he becomes a heel in front of the Progress crowd, which he was considered the savior for Progress going against Jimmy Havoc, finally dethroning him. So it was kind of amazing to watch him come full circle here, be this heel with the crowd. He faked an injury, which was excellent, nice. And did it in great fashion. So I just really loved that performance from him. I think after that, Ospreay's year's a little weak because he's mostly in New Japan, kind of stuck in the shuffle, doing kind of, you know, the six-man, eight-man routine.
With Chaos, yeah.
Yeah, with Chaos, but, you know, at the end of the year, basically from when he signed with Ring of Honor and made his debut on, I think he had a pretty good bounce back, where all of his Ring of Honor stuff so far has been impressive.
Yeah.
He has the Adam Cole match at Progress, which I thought was much better than their New Japan match. And then the latest Ricochet match, which while I didn't think it was excellent, was another kind of fun showcase type match, and he ended up having a really good match with Cody Rhodes too from the IPW Super Show that I checked out a couple of days ago. So that's kind of where Ospreay's at. I can see him being number one for some people.
Sure.
Like Timothy and Quentin did their list of top 50 wrestlers.
Don't spoil it. He's just in the top for them.
Well, Timothy, he's not on Timothy's list at all, actually.
Well, Timothy's fired. I know he's listening. I'm going to have to listen to that. So, that's also on my to-do list. Him and AJ Styles, neither one of them made the list, huh? Right, folks, please don't judge the rest of our content output on what you're listening to. Just listen to Timothy explain. I'm sure he had really good reasons. So check those out. It's on the Pro Wrestling Only feed. I love having Quentin on board. They're 50 wrestlers of the year in about 8 hours, which we will not do tonight. So
no, so we can move along. But yeah, I mean, he's somebody that could just – he can rank that whole spectrum, and I get it. I mean, he's a flawed worker, but he has some absolutely spectacular performances. And I think if he could find his character and something that really worked, it'll be a heel. I think just the way he acts, he could be the best wrestler in the world in my eyes.
You know, and folks, that was Chad's number 9. You had 8 more picks that were better than that. And William is on my list considerably higher, so I'm going to wait and I'll talk to him a little bit more. I will say that with you talked on the, kind of the opening, I'm trying to remember the words, the theatrics, I'm trying to remember the term you just used there, with their dance routine, as you called it. You know, I don't mind that at all, except the one thing I absolutely hate is when they do like that weak one arm, like leg sweep. And then do like one count where they just immediately roll off each other. I think that is the corniest shit. Like in Final Battle, they did it with Skrull and Dragon Lee and them. I think like, you know, flip around. I love like the handspring out of like a Rana, all that stuff. Like, I think that's cool. I think like the little sweep and like covers is just, I think that is the pits when it comes to dancing in the beginning. Well, I should say routine. I mean, you may be talking about some, maybe they did a dance off. I don't know. I didn't
see. Yeah, they actually did a legit dance off. Okay, so this match was Strickland, where the music, you know, WXW is very careful with their copyright, so they dubbed in the music, but I assume it's All Night Long from Lionel Richie.
Okay.
They were dancing too because the crowd was chanting that after
you know what?
They came back.
I like dance offs more than one handed leg sweep and weak one count covers in the first minute of a match. So there you go.
There you go.
So my number 9 is Dalton Castle. We're sick with Ring of Honor right now. So and one of the things that kind of holds him back right now is that you know there's really no like long drawn out match of his as a singles that, you know, I find him incredibly entertaining. He's probably one of my top 2 favorite acts in Ring of Honor. I always want to check out his match. I think he performs really well on house shows. I think he was a great TV worker this year too. I know that people tired of, you know, Silas Young and that feud, but I honestly thought, you know, I thought that he and the boys carried it, and I thought that their fight without honor was deserved, and he had a couple main events on TV, and I thought that was like a 3 3/4 match. It was a really good TV match for Ring of Honor. And so I'm always interested in what he's up to. I thought the Cabana feud, which is something that we've talked about too, I think that was a pretty good stepping stone for him, and I'm excited in what he's going to do in 2017 because I think that they have him finally, you know, right up. I shouldn't say finally. I mean, it's a slow process with kind of elevating these guys, and I think he's going to be a top guy there, but still certainly one of the more entertaining guys that I like to catch.
Yeah, I mean, And it's kind of weird to say, but he's kind of like their Dusty, you know? I mean, he's that special attraction. In a lot of ways, if you're going to a Ring of Honor show, I mean, or an Andre the Giant, I mean, he's that type of star where I don't think it goes back and forth, but I don't necessarily think he needs to be the world champion. Right. I think he should win more than he loses, but I think he retains most of his charm and credibility either way.
Yeah, I agree. He's it's something I've talked about at PWO also is, you know, I do think he's bulletproof in a way because he can take pins. He gets a great pop every time out. When I was at the tapings in Philadelphia after Final Battle, he was the only guy that the crowd would side with over the Bullet Club, which I thought was a huge testament to how over he was. And I think they see that too. But he is a guy that, you know, you could, when you balance a promotion out, you know, that guy can seemingly draw. I mean, I think one of my points has kind of been that I'm not sure he's there yet as someone that's like, oh, I want to go to Ring of Honor because Dalton Castle's on the card. I think he's one of the reasons that kind of goes with like the brand. Like he's one of those top 5 guys you think of, but I don't think he's like an Ospreay level of a draw. And that's not a bold statement or anything, but that, you know, when comparing to somebody like that, I don't think he's at that level, but I don't think he needs to have a belt either because he's, you know, so entertaining and everybody waits for his match and he's, you know, he's a heck of a wrestler. You know, I don't tire of his matches either. And they are you know, as all guys, especially now with so much footage available, like, yeah, you know, if I'm watching, you know, 10 Zack Sabre Jr. matches, you know, you're starting to pick up the same type of things, or Marty Scurll, you know, and, but, you know, to Dalton, even though a lot of guys do, you know, slow, drawn-out German suplexes, he's not the only guy. His is still the best, and, you know, it always pops you. You know, his peacock stuff, it always pops you. Even though you know he's going to fake that dive, it still makes me smile every time he does it. So that is why he made my list. So let's move to your number eight then.
I'm guessing you may have my number eight higher, and if so, we'll just talk about him when you have him. But it's Kyle O'Reilly.
You know, Kyle O'Reilly did not make my list. So you can talk about him now. I'll talk briefly why he didn't make my list. Is that I have certainly like Kyle O'Reilly, and I like the Adam Cole match, and I like this stuff earlier in the year. I haven't been like a super fan of bulked up Kyle O'Reilly's work. I think his stuff with Kushida was great. I haven't seen the Shibata match from New Japan, so I'll let you talk. But he actually didn't kind of run into my list of guys that, oh, there's a Kyle. Oh, like I need to go see Kyle O'Reilly.
So he's kind of a guy that, you know, I mean, he lives and dies with Ring of Honor, which is not the
for now
most, I guess, trendy promotion, and kind of our corner of the internet this year in some regards. But I think he's had a really spectacular year in a lot of areas, both working as a junior underneath. You had the Kushida stuff also, his Best of the Super Junior stuff I enjoyed greatly. Then he bulked up, and then he has the Shibata series, where I think he looked really credible in that regard. His tag work, I mean, Red Dragon this year, I think he's actually had a pretty underrated year as a tag team. Mm-hmm. Here's a deep cut, but they had a match with the All Night Express from January 16th in Collinsville, Illinois, which was on the Winter Warriors tour, kind of a throwaway, you know, tag mm-hmm. match, but I went 4 stars on it. I thought it was a great Southern style tag match with hot action throughout. It's kind of one of my top hidden gems for the whole year in tag matches. They also faced the Young Bucks in PWG. Faced Death by Elbow just recently at the Mystery Vortex show, which we haven't seen, of course. But I'm
spoilers. I'm, thank you. Now you spoiled that for me. Anyway,
I'm looking forward to that. But also in Ring of Honor, I've enjoyed his singles work. I enjoyed the Adam Cole feud and the way it built. His Jay Lethal match from that TV episode where he gets his arm worked over a shoulder. I thought that was some great character work on his regard. Has the Zack Sabre Jr. match from PWG 13. Also the Riddle match from Bola, which I enjoyed greatly. So he just has a lot of kind of up and down the card, and I thought he fit a variety of roles and excelled in all of them.
Yeah, he was right off of my honorable mention list. I mean, honestly, I could put him above Leo Rush. Just wanted to talk about Leo Rush. So my number eight is Naito. So and he didn't make your list, but he did make mine. And you know, my list is a little markish, right? So you got like the cool heel from New Japan who's really entertaining. And I've checked out some of his stuff in New Japan this year too. We did the Michael Elgin match, which I thought was terrific. Mm-hmm. For the Match of the Week Club. And I, in addition to that, of course, he held the title, and I've seen all his work in Ring of Honor, and he was clearly one of the, yeah, he's got a great gimmick. He's got, I think he's a decent worker too, and you know, another guy that's, he's really built himself up. So he didn't make your list for worker wise, but I do think maybe from an entertainment standpoint, I am curious in your thoughts on him.
Yeah, he's right around. I mean, he's in my top 20. He's somebody that I thought when he was put in there to have a big match, he really delivered almost every time out. I loved his G1. In particular, and that culminated in the Kenny Omega match, which I thought was the masterpiece of Omega's career so far. And then the Elgin match to me was spectacular. I couldn't believe how great chemistry they had together. And then also I enjoyed the Okada matches. I mean, I didn't think either one was a match of the year candidate or anything, but both were very good in that 3.5 to 4-star range. An interesting year for him overall. Just barely kind of missed the cut, and someone I think will be a high presence in New Japan for the foreseeable future, for sure.
Definitely. All right, who do you have at number seven?
All right, my number seven, Shingo Takagi, who I will just assume you do not have.
Well, I mean, you talked about Taguchi before. So tell me about Takagi.
So Shingo is, I think it's fair to say, the ace of Dragon Gate.
Yeah, yeah, I've heard of him before, I never
thought I would kind of, certainly a year ago at this time, I didn't think I'd be coming on a podcast and stomping for Dragon Gate. It's a promotion I've typically not enjoyed very much, but I really enjoyed it this year, and something about the prospects of the future and just Shingo as the lead heel and the leader of their main heel faction, Berserk, really fit for me. And it kind of is just one of those things where I went throughout the year and I kept saying, you know, throughout with Dragon Gate, oh, I kind of like Big R better. I like Ida better. I like this and that and Yamato in the beginning of the year. But at the end of the day, throughout the entire year, Shingo was the guy. And I think it's kind of weird. Like, the Dragon Gate community online is, there's some detractors of Shingo, which is a little odd. I guess I kind of don't understand. I hope it's not residual from the scandal of a decade past. I don't know. But, I mean, you know, Jay, who runs iHeartDG.com, an absolute goldmine resource for any Dragon Gate fan, he does not like Shingo at all. So, and also a couple of the individuals on the Open the Voice Gate podcast at Voices of Wrestling don't like Shingo or the faction Berserk and think they're too dominating. I didn't get that sense much. I mean, he held the title for half the year, and you know, he's been unsuccessful in going for the tag titles since then and other stuff. So I haven't had a problem at all with his push. And he's really portrayed, and this is something I've taken from Joe Lanza, I agree with that, he's portrayed that kind of bully jock high school character so well, where he really feels like the captain of the football team that just wears the Letterman jacket, has the best looking girl, you know, in the school, and is just a complete asshole that you want to see get his. And in all of the unit disband matches and the multi-man matches that I've ranked highly throughout the year, he's been kind of that focal point for all of them, and stuff has lived and died and ran through Shingo. But beyond that, he's had the singles matches, some strong singles match with Jimmy Susumu, and then the title change with Yamato, which I thought was a fabulous match at Kobe World. So he's kind of somebody that I didn't think would rank this high until I started making the list, and when it came down to it, I had to have him at number seven.
All right, very good. So my number seven, he's probably a little bit higher on your list, so we can wait, but my number seven's Trevor Lee.
Yeah, we'll get to him in a bit.
Okay, so I'll just give some high-level things, and I'll let you go later on with him. So with Trevor, I have checked out some select CWF matches of his, including the Andrew Everett match, which is one of the best matches I've seen this year. I find him entertaining on TNA and a great heel in PWG, and he's a young guy still. And, you know, I'm going to let you talk later about how his role and how he handles himself as a champion, because I know you're going to want to spouse on that. So, but I think he is, and for how young he is, it's just it's fantastic. So we'll wait for him for talk a little bit later on. But let's jump to your number six.
My number six is Kushida. Okay. And he fell, you know, in some ways it's like, well, it really feels like he fell off in the second half of the year. And I've heard that some. But then I kind of started looking at his stuff, and he had the Bushi match at Power Struggle, which I really liked, and had Kushida getting booed, which was interesting.
Wow.
And
I haven't got there yet in my in my Kushida Junior IWGP rewatch. So
right, so he had that match, which I had at 4 stars, and he also had the trios final battle, which I enjoyed that match a good deal, and also the semifinal, which I thought was a strong match. So he has little nuggets there in the second half that I found to be enjoyable. The Dalton Castle match at Field of Honor was also really good. But his first half of the year, to me, was absolutely spectacular. You have the Ospreay matches we've talked about. You have the Jushin Thunder Liger match, which I think is just fabulous. Maybe Liger's, like, last great absolute classic match in his storied career. The Bushi match in February kind of is the best of that type of style of the mist and the interference and everything coming together.
Right.
I've seen that's that something match. I enjoyed. The Kyle O'Reilly series we talked about, and also his stuff in the Best of the Super Juniors, which was enjoyable too, that we didn't mention, like his match versus Taguchi and so forth. Now, the Super J Cup is kind of seen as the black eye of New Japan booking throughout the entire year, but I did enjoy his matches there. He ended up winning the whole thing and had some enjoyable stuff throughout, including the final with Kanemaru. So it may seem high, and he was somebody that I think did drop off in the second half of the year, but I guess I just didn't see as many holes in his resume as compared to some of the other people that I have in that 10 to 20 range. So that's why he landed at number 6 for me.
Yeah, he's a little bit higher for me, so I'll share my thoughts on Kushida a little bit later on then. My number 6 is Chris Hero. So I know you're going to talk about him later on. But I'll just briefly say that this is solely because he did appear on Place to Be Nation, the Letters from Kayfabe podcast, which I encourage you all to check out. No, that's not the reason he's on there, but he had a tremendous 2016. You're going to see that everywhere, and it's warranted, and Chad's going to talk about it later. I came in a little bit late to it to kind of catch up to it just because of different things that I was watching at the time, and everything I've seen, even within tag teams and like that, I mean, the guy is awesome. He had a great year. I like to seek out his matches now. I've seen some of his Evolve stuff. I've seen his PWG stuff. I think he's actually a really good color commentator. I think he does a great job of blending kayfabe with it. And I think that's, for a second, people say, like, oh, man, PWG, the commentary. Like, I love the commentary in PWG. I don't know. It's a minority opinion. But, I think when Hero cycles in, he's really good. And I think, of course, I don't think he can have a bad match. And so, and it doesn't matter the stage, right? Because he was well-traveled this year from the SCI where you got to see him to, of course, Evolve and other things like that. So I slotted them in here because it was deserved. I wanted to make it, my personal list, but it would also be, like, remiss to not have him on there considering how great he was. So I slotted him at my number 6. So, why don't we take a quick break, Chad, here before our number 5s, and then we'll come back and we will talk our top 5 workers wrestlers for 2016.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Voice of Ring of Honor's Kevin Kelly here. I just want to make sure you're all subscribed to all of our great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. Now, it's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search for and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation Wrestling Feed, Place to Be Nation Pop Feed, Pro Wrestling Only Feed, and, of course, the Kevin Kelly Show Feed, which includes the full archives of my podcast. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And, of course, as always, enjoy all the great action of Ring of Honor Wrestling and everything presented to you on PlaceToBeNation.com.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rizzero here, and I want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com, and we offer them to you across two great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, you can check out Scott Criscolo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, with our famous vintage wall pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current-day wrestling with the smash hit Clotheslines and Headlines, our steady veteran main event, and the beloved monthly pay-per-view reaction shows with immediate feedback on all pro wrestling super shows. Relive wrestling's past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series led by Ben Morse, the always contentious Dangerous Alliance podcast, and, Survey Says, a fun look back at the good, bad, and ugly of WCW. On our very popular Place of Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, NBA Team, Lucha Undead, Geek and Sassy, and a veritable podcast heaven for comic fans with Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, and Imaginary Stories. Subscribe to both of those feeds on iTunes and rate and leave feedback for us as well. All of these shows plus others available at PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlaceToBeNation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping, and download our free Place to Be Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks via the links on the right-hand side of our site. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, TheHistoryOfWrestling.com, and Scott Keith's Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
The PWO PTBN feed has changed its name. Now it will be known simply as Pro Wrestling Only. So it should be easier to find and indeed to say. All of your favorite shows are still here, including Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Kayfabe, Titans of Wrestling, Tag Teams Back Again, This Week in Wrestling, and many, many more, including our full archives of tremendous content. So make sure you subscribe to the Pro Wrestling Only feed today.
All right, welcome back to the first Brad and Chad show, and that's right, in over 3 years. Thank you for sticking with us here through the break. We are talking our top 10 workers, top 10 wrestlers of 2016, and we are just about to unveil the top five. But before we get there, Chad, tell me what kind of projects you have going on right now.
So I have a few things I'll mention, a couple of outside booking dates, but they have a tie into PTBN. One is I wrote an article about Will Ospreay, who I mentioned as my number 9. It'll be in the New Japan ebook from Voices of Wrestling, which this will be the third time they're doing the New Japan ebook, a really good resource to look at the year in review for New Japan. The second thing, and this is why I'm glad we're doing this podcast, Brad, this will put a bow on 2016 for me for the most part. 2017 I will be a lot more selective in what I actually watch, and that is because me and Charles from Pro Wrestling Only are going to start watching the 2000s, and we're starting right in Fantastic. January 2000. We jumped in today, actually watched a few matches apiece, and we're hoping, you know, at the end of the month to podcast on each month, and to have some written articles as well, some blurbs, match of the year stuff, top 100 matches at the very end of the year, stuff like that. It's a pretty severe undertaking, so I hope it comes to fruition, but it's something I'm really excited about.
That's great, and, you know, Charles just, he unveiled for us his top 500 matches of the 90s, and that was a big deal at the site here in 2016, and, I'm really excited to see that project take off. I know there's already been some work done when it comes to viewing, and let me tell you, folks, there are a lot of matches each month in each year of the 2000s. I mean, these are, I've seen the lists, and they are very, very comprehensive. I mean, we are talking, you know, as much footage as he could get his hands on. It's logged and ready to go and be watched and talked about. And a lot of the stuff is, you know, I mean, Chad, you did some great IWA Mid-South reviews, kind of some forgotten shows from the early 2000s that are on Place to Be Nation. But there's a lot to unearth, would you say? Because, I mean, you're talking about, yes, the internet age is here, but that's still way back, and of course in VHS, probably tape trading, right, in early 2000s.
Yeah, I mean, even today we both watched this Tarzan Boy versus Rey Bucanero lucha match. We both went 4 stars on it. It's a match I never heard of, and wasn't easily obtainable. We kind of had to go to a couple sources to find it. So that's kind of what we're dealing with. I mean, you know, you get this stuff in, even something like that. I mean, we saw it. Charles converted it. Saw the match time was 15 minutes, and we were like, I don't know what we have here. And then all of a sudden, you realize, you got a great match on your hands.
Yeah. Wow. So that is a great project. It'll be great to have Charles back regularly on the feed, and like you did hint, you know, could be some written companions to that, as Charles has done for us in the past. And of course, you can listen to him back with the Wrestling with the Past. The archive is still out on Place to Be Nation. Some great shows back from when we were first kind of finding our groove and expanding, and that he was a huge partner for us. So, and of course, he's our friend too. So that's really exciting. And, of course, you have Where the Big Boys Play, which is into 1993 now with you and Parv. So. And to kind of piggyback on your yearbook there that you worked on with Voices of Wrestling, and I certainly would encourage folks to check that out. And, you know, I know they offer it for free, but with a donation option, and I know in talking to Rich, and you know, we may that goes back to the contributors. So. You know, I personally am, I'm interested in that too. I want to read what they put together, and I will certainly throw some money their way. And I may even specifically earmark that you don't see any of it. No, I'm sure the article's fine since you jumped over and did that. But I would be calling you, I would be claiming treason with a wink, because I've sat in with the final battle preview there, which I also did for Place to Be Nation, and really the main reason for that is that, of course, over the summer we announced that we are co-promoting the Ring of Honor 50 Greatest Wrestlers Ever project, and that is voting will be open in the next couple weeks. We've been talking on the message boards there for about 6 months. And there has been times when I've been talking to myself on the message boards and bumping things and going through my process, but I have my top 60 now, and I put the work in. I haven't watched as much as I would have liked to, because I had to balance that with 2016 watching and things that I was interested in also. I think that project's going to catch some steam as people kind of, they don't jump in late, but you know, everybody multitasks and has different priorities. And I think you'll see, a burst in the beginning, and I think we'll see a burst in the end. But if you check out the Voices of Wrestling forums through their website there, you'll see a specific sub forum there. And there's a master list of nominations and threads for everyone that's been nominated. We're doing a top 10 non-wrestler poll, and then a top 50 wrestler poll, and that can be really, you know, whatever you want to call it. You know, you want to base it solely on work, you want to base it on work plus drawing plus, you know, historical significance, you know, whatever you want to do, right? It's similar to the Greatest Wrestlers Ever project, which almost quite literally burned PWO to the ground. It's in very much the same vein with that, although this has been not nearly as confrontational as that was. But we're all in the upswing here. All positive thoughts here heading into 2017. So that's a cool project that you can check out too, in addition to all the great articles and podcasts at placetobenation.com. We have some new announcements coming in with some new shows. We were wrapping up the pilot season on the Pro Wrestling Only feed that was a great success. There are a couple shows that we are going to be picking up to kind of expand our reach and some different topics. Not everybody. I don't want to make it seem like that. I mean, there were some barriers to be able to kind of be a part of it, and we were looking for a bunch of different things, and there have been some people that have done that, and so we're really looking forward to working with them. More announcements on that in early 2017. And then, of course, with Place to Be Nation Wrestling, too, we did announce the Our Vantage Point podcast is partnering up with Place to Be Nation, so you'll hear their new shows starting this week starting in 2017 on January 2nd. You're hearing this now. It's already out. And we did post a couple primers from them that are on the feed also, an episode with our friend Scott Keith and another one of their episodes, one of the more recent ones there that you can check out to kind of see that kind of style and how it meshes with the Place to Be podcast and other shows that we have on the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed. And again, we always appreciate everybody for subscribing and rating. People still do that. Everybody asks for it. And of course, our Amazon link too helps give back to the contributors that we have at the site. So, all right, with that said, let us move to our top five. I'll take a quick breath here. Chad, go ahead with your number
five.
Yeah,
and I just want to say, like, my top five to me, like, if you look at some of the great kind of, like, the 1976 Academy Awards for movies, where you had, like, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, All Day Afternoon, Jaws, Barry Lyndon, just a motley crew of great Murderers Row, so to speak, of great movies kind of wedged together. I kind of feel like this top five is like that for this year. I mean, I don't know how, I guess, epic this 2016 in the wrestling world it will be historically, but I feel really strong that each of these five guys had a spectacular year in ring. And saying all that, my number five is Matt Riddle.
Okay.
So, probably the best rookie year of all time, if you consider this as rookie year, which I would. Just a spectacular worker that can garner sympathetic heat when he shows up. I mean, at the SCI, that's the easiest litmus test for me. Just because I saw it firsthand. I mean, somebody that never worked anywhere near that area that came in, kind of became an adopted son for that area. That was my wife, Jennifer's first wrestling show, period. She was, he was by far her favorite worker of the entire weekend. And somebody she connected with. So, he just has that great ability, can really grapple, of course. Also has some sick bumping. I think that really helps him, like when he does the German suplexes and other stuff. There's a dangerous aspect to that. To me, it really started out with his breakout performance the first weekend. Again, another match with Tracy Williams, who keeps popping up. And Tracy Williams also was an honorable mention for me. I should mention that. But yeah, that started it off. And from there, he kind of just went running again through everything. And then each new promotion he enters, like at Progress with Chapter 39, where he faced Will Ospreay, he got that insane reaction. And then he was the catalyst for the final match to determine the champion and that. He's worked well and beyond and had some interesting stuff. Started to come into AAW. He worked Bola and really got over well there. So he clicks on all cylinders. It seems like he's going to be the focal point of WWE Live going forward in 2017. And
sure. Smart move by them.
Right. And I look forward to seeing him continue in that vein. I also appreciate that he has like these kind of short matches that pack a lot of punch. Like he has a match with Trevor Lee from Evolve 63 that's just over 10 minutes, but I still ranked four and a quarter, four and a half. I mean, just wow. A great match, just a great sprint. Again, no wasted motion. Even the match like he had at Evolve 59 versus Zack Sabre Jr., which is, I'm looking at Cage Match now. I can't even believe it. It says it's only 9:24, which I thought it was longer than that. And that's another match I have at 4 stars. Just he's able to really pack a lot into a short amount of time and make it work.
Yeah, and I think from an aura standpoint, I mean, for the first half of the year, I mean, there was a buzz where, like, anything you could find, like, that was his online was like, oh, man, I definitely want to seek him out. And he had a huge amount of buzz for me, and it kind of tailed off as the year went on. I don't know if it was because, and let me ask you this, is, you know, he kind of worked a Chris Hero-esque schedule, and that, like, he really ended up either showing up or no showing up, you know, a ton of places. Like, he was, in the beginning, it was like, oh, man, you know, he came from the Monster Factory, and it was working with Evolve, and so, like, you know, and Gabe has written some things about him and kind of how he slowly brought him on. So you were kind of following that, and then really when he hit kind of big, he started, you know, really taking a ton of bookings everywhere, which is great for him. And I don't know if that lost any luster for you or anything like that, but everything that I watched was fantastic. I think you explained it really well. He just missed my list. I knew you'd talk about him. He's a guy that you know, I've watched his stuff with Hero and Evolve and the TJ Perkins match and the SEI stuff also. It'll be interesting to see where he goes. I guess in the couple years, it's not going to be a big surprise. He has a contract with WWN and that has an out for WWE, and whenever they're kind of ready for him to kind of bring in the, you know, I'm sure they'll do that. So, but yeah, from a rookie year standpoint, I mean, I don't think I've seen anybody with that kind of buzz ever. So, all right. So that was Matt Riddle, Chad's number five. My number five is Matt Hardy. And for seemingly obvious reasons, in that, you know, while not a regular TNA watcher, although not a TNA hater, just by the fact with the name and some of the things associated with that, you know, his stuff this year with was, you know, just really fantastic, and it was DVR material for me, whereas I was checking out and I was making sure that I was actually taping Impact Wrestling so I could watch, you know, Total Deletion and the ones they had before there too, and we reviewed for the Match Club, we reviewed their match from the from Bound for Glory, excuse me, that they had too, which is probably the, you know, they mixed in, you know, some of the theatrical things with that as best they could, and that was more your traditional Matt Hardy match. And, you know, that guy's got a great gig going. He had a fantastic year, incredibly entertaining. The whole thing was entertaining. The Xylophone thing was entertaining. Brad Stutz showing up as the scribe is entertaining, you know, and his, you know, I mean, the guy's, he's brilliant, you know, and so I certainly wanted to include him here on the list. Anything you want to add on Mr. Hardy?
Sorry, yeah, I was talking in mute there. No, yeah, I mean, you know, originally we thought about doing like a favorites list, like on rank and file, and if this was just a strict favorites, he'd have been in my top 10. For me, really just the way he's crafted kind of a character and aura around what he's doing feels groundbreaking and feels like something that's sustainable and could be utilized to make, you know, TNA to a degree relevant again. And he's parlayed that now into his feud upcoming versus the Young Bucks, and like when he went into AAW with Brother Hero and the season deletings from PWX. I mean, every time he shows up now, the shows seem to revolve around him on an indie, and that's really profitable for him, and kudos to him for creating such an intriguing character.
Yeah, and that's unique too, you know, to be able to do that and sustain that type of buzz everywhere you go. And it, you know, the reaction for him coming on screen at Final Battle was huge, you know, and it's great to creatively they can do something there, and they'll do something at WrestleMania weekend, and I think that that'll be a decent draw. I think once you know, everybody that wants to go to NXT gets their tickets and starts looking around, you know, I think that that'll be a big draw for Ring of Honor's Supercard of Honor show that weekend. So, all right. And who do you have at your number four?
My number four is tough, as Trevor Lee.
There he is.
And he really could be my number one. I actually think he is, if he'd have been booked better in AAW, I think he'd have been my number one. It's
there
quite
you go.
Possible.
That was the sliver of nuance in your list.
He's been a bunch of different places. I think that helps him this year. And that, like, I mean, he's a junior in TNA, and had some interesting stuff, like at the Bound for Glory match versus DJZ. I enjoyed. Had a couple other stuff on One Night Only. That was, you know, good. Nothing great, but still good. And then he's worked AAW, has the excellent match with Chris Hero there, but also has some kind of showcasey, dancey type stuff that's not my cup of tea otherwise. And PWG, I think he's actually been booked really strong throughout the year. Has the Zack Sabre Jr. match, which I enjoyed.
Great match.
Sami Callihan match, As you get further in the year, he has the match with Andrew Everett, which is a good contrast to the CWF match. And you also get to see him try some stuff that they utilize in that CWF match. So that's an interesting kind of caveat of watching that match. And then later on in the year, and his run through Bola was very intriguing too. But I mean, the cornerstone, I think, of any 2016 Trevor Lee pimped year is going to be CWF Mid-Atlantic, where he's the champion. And I don't know when's the last championship reign I've enjoyed as much as the one he's currently doing. Probably Bryan Danielson 2006 is the closest contender. I just think it's fabulous. It goes beyond, I mean, you know, his defenses are long. I mean, he won the title in an hour and 45 minute match. So it requires a lot of patience. And that match it's a journey. So he won it with that. And then he faced his first defense is versus Jesse Adler, who's like a 20-year-old rookie. And they wrestled for 45 minutes. And I thought that match was also great. As well, and then beyond that, he has the match with Cedric Alexander, and then we get the match with Andrew Everett, which is one of my top 10 matches of the year, a fantastic, great match, as you described earlier. But then as he goes on, you know, it's almost like you thought he peaked there, and that kicked off the great feud with Brad Attitude. But they were saving that. Now, that match was in June, and they've saved that singles match. They just wrestled at Battlecade in December. So they held off on that for 6 months. And in those 6 months, it was amazing that Trevor was still able to have some compelling matchups versus talent that, quite frankly, probably wasn't going to win the title from him. And the way they built that, I mean, he had a absolute excellent match versus John Skyler, which blew me away. Had a fun brawl type match against Joshua Cutshaw. Has the really excellent match versus Eric Royal from the Rumble. I'd recommend that one for sure. And then some stuff like versus Otto Schwartz, versus Trip Cassidy. Kind of these underneath opponents, like I said, that, you know, they weren't going to beat Trevor, but he made it compelling. And the way he carries himself at 23 years old, I think is amazing. And I know CWF Mid-Atlantic, it can kind of feel like a niche promotion because, you know, I mean, this is a promotion that probably I don't think they've ever drawn maybe 500 fans. I'm not quite sure what the capacity of the Sportatorium is, but, you know, they have their own building. They run their big shows there. They put their show up for free on YouTube. So I know this can kind of feel like me, you know, going on and on about a niche promotion just to kind of be the guy that likes the one kind of weird thing. But the way they've booked in an old school way, and now here we are at the end of 2016, and I won't spoil the Battlecade main event match, but, you know, you have Brad Attitude as a challenger. And then if you look beyond that, if Trevor Lee is able to defeat Brad Attitude, you have Nick Richards, who has a golden opportunity. You have Andrew Everett, who has a golden opportunity. You have Roy Wilkins, who he beat for the title, that has a golden opportunity. All three of those guys are lined up with title shots that they can cash in at any moment.
Any moment, right. Huh? Everybody loves that
gimmick.
Well,
they don't do it as gimmicky in there. They do schedule it. You know, like you can't just run in. It's basically like a ticket to where you can say on this show, I'm going to wrestle you there. Now, Joshua Cutshaw kind of did that in their matchup. They made it work where it was still like a 60-minute match. But it was kind of in that vein. But, yeah, for the most part, it's, you know, I want to wrestle you here. So they do a good job of not kind of falling into that trope where you have a title change, you know, 2 minute, I hit my finisher, and that's that. But saying all that, like with the booking and everything lined up, you know, I talked about how Evolve brought me back into my fandom. And Evolve had a great year. I think Evolve was the best promotion in ring, bell to bell, this year. But you know, if I'm, I don't know if I'll do an observer ballot, but when I think about it and I think about Evolve's champion, it's Timothy Thatcher, who I know you said I thought you, I might be mentioning later on. I'm not.
Yeah,
I'm not.
Yeah.
I didn't think he worked well as a champion at all, even though I'm a defender of Thatcher still. It's obvious that a lot of the fan base has turned against him, and that's the fault of the Evolve promotion. So when it comes down to it, I think CWF and Evolve were my two favorite promotions of 2016. It's like, who had the better book champion? You know, it's a cakewalk for CWF. So that's why they are my promotion of the year, which, I know that sounds kind of crazy and niche and me just trying to be a contrarian, but as somebody that's followed the YouTube show, I've just been blown away, and Trevor Lee is absolutely the cornerstone of that promotion.
I mean, that's a huge endorsement right there, you know, and I know that it's a sincere one. You're not pandering to anyone with that. And I will say, too, you know, Thatcher thing, we were both interchanging names. I actually thought Tracy Williams would be on your list later. Because we were talking.
Right. Tracy Williams is my number 11.
Right. So he was close. So that's where I was kind of in the same ballpark. I did not think Thatcher would be. But so I am. I always usually have one of those. So that's who I meant with that one there. They all look the same to me, these white grapplers and whatnot. All right. So my number four is Kushida, who you talked about earlier at number six, I think.
Right.
He did track into my number four, and I kind of agree with you. So, boy, his first half was nonstop. I mean, I had considered him even. I had made a case for, I thought he could be on the top 50 list of all-time ROH guys because his output in ROH was so good. And, you know, he's worked their TV standard matches and been really good, you know, to a point in the year. I thought his match with Adam Cole was – the TV match of the year, and then his match with Kyle O'Reilly from the War of the Worlds tour, the taping they had in Toronto. So that was really good for what you get to see. I haven't seen the full version of it yet. So he could just kind of get in there and pull off a top TV show. So TV match. And then in his New Japan stuff, you ran through there. And I remember, you know, hearing about the Liger match, going to be watching it real soon. And then but after that Super J Cup, you know, we see him again at Final Battle and in that Trios thing, but not much from in there. But he still came in at number four for me. Really enjoy his work and both his character and the how he's in the ring and how he works around with the arm. And I thought he had a great match with ACH in Philly earlier this year. And I thought his going all the way back would almost be over a year at Wrestle Kingdom against Kenny Omega. That was a solid 3.5, 3.75 match there too. So just an entertaining guy. Really look forward to watching. And as I did hint with the New Japan World, they put up all the title defenses for all their belts in 2016 for free. And I am going to be subscribing, although I probably won't watch on January 4th because of work reasons. He was the first guy. I was I want to see all his defenses. So I'm looking forward to going through the rest of those. So he came in at my number four. That's Kushida. So who do you have at number three there, Chad?
My number three, and I'm interested if you have him, is AJ Styles.
Yes, okay. I do have him. He is my number two, so why don't we both talk about him right now?
I mean, for somebody who's 39 years of age, it's amazing what he's done. Came in, kind of took WWE by storm. I mean, I think if you'd have looked at January 4th and said Nakamura and AJ are both leaving New Japan after their great match there, I'd have probably projected Nakamura to be a bigger star within the WWE kind of promotion and machine. And that's not been the case at all. I mean, AJ's been bigger star, better worker, much more consistent worker. I mean, he's had good matches with James Ellsworth, for God's sakes, on multiple occasions.
Yeah, compelling matches. I don't think Nakamura will ever reach him. I think I don't even think it'll be a contest, even when he does eventually come up.
Yeah, it's just been incredible. And then you tack on, I mean, like I said with Trevor, he's the AAW booking for being my number one. I mean, honest to God, AJ Styles is probably some subpar Chris Jericho matches from being my number one. Because I didn't like some matches of that feud, but otherwise, I mean, the stuff with with Roman Reigns was just fantastic and really kind of set him off into the stratosphere. Then you had the John Cena feud, which was compelling. Then you had Dean Ambrose, which I know neither me or you are that high on Dean Ambrose. So for him to have a compelling feud with Dean Ambrose that I was invested in and enjoyed the matches a great deal, that says a lot to me about AJ Styles.
Absolutely. I mean, he took a bottom five worker in the company to have really great.
Somebody, you know, neither one of us, though, think Ambrose. I mean, I would say he's decent. As honestly how right. I categorize him.
Yeah, that's fair. Sure.
So I thought that feud, and that feud went for a long time and was still compelling right up to the TLC match they had. So kudos to AJ. I really hope he gets that kind of marquee WrestleMania moment match, whether it's with Undertaker, John Cena, whoever. Well, probably won't be with Cena now that they're wrestling at the Rumble. But yeah. Really hope he gets, you know, even if he loses the belt to Cena at the Rumble, I hope he has a shot where he can showcase his skills because he deserves it.
And really, when you think about, like, a guy from the outside coming in, I mean, it's unprecedented. And I'm not missing a name, I don't think, because, I mean, even when Danielson came in, it was, you know, in NXT as the Miz's, you know, young boy, you know, I mean... This is a guy that they put out there, and that Rumble reaction, and credit to the Orlando crowd, it was the right place to do it. But I mean, you don't, that goes back to like 2000, you know, Attitude Era type. Oh, look who's here! I mean, nobody gets. I mean, that's a tingling reaction to hear and still watch, and then watch that match, and then to see now in hindsight how much they went with him when everybody was, you know. And rightfully so, you know, was cautious with what they would do with him. But he was certainly not buried, and certainly, you know, put right into the day after WrestleMania and losing to Chris Jericho, you know, right into those matches with Roman Reigns, which cemented him. And then you go into the dream matches with John Cena, and you're talking, you know, the best of 2005, 10 plus years later, and they were great matches. And I did watch the SummerSlam match. I had teased earlier that I only saw the end of the event live, but I actually got the Blu-ray really cheap, and I watched that match because I wanted to see that once. It was really good, of course. But yeah, just a phenomenal, pun intended, although not initially intended, year for AJ Styles. And maybe one of the more like unbelievable years ever, especially for someone coming in, especially from TNA, you know, for WWE. So he's the only WWE guy who made my list by a long shot, the only one that, you know, and I'm a Roman Reigns supporter, and I, you know, I thought the reaction he got back at WrestleMania 31 was shitty, and then I thought that, you know, I saw him at TLC when Roman, you know, wondering why he's not on my list here now, is, you know, and I was rooting for him, and it's weird because you create this relationship where, like, I'm rooting for, like, other people to like him, which is really weird and, like, a hobby to be like, oh, come on, guys, just cheer for him. It's so odd to be, like, attached in like that. And he won the Boston crowd over. And then the next night, which I wasn't there, I was there the previous pay-per-view, had traveled up with the boys. And, you know, we won the title. And I thought it was great. And then as soon as the Triple H stuff came in that Rumble, you know, it just was all downhill from there. And, you know, set up to die and wither on the vine there since then. But yeah, the matches with AJ Styles were awesome for Roman, but he wasn't going to make my list then now. So it was AJ Styles is the guy that I was, he was seeking out from the WWE. So he was my number two, and he was your number three. So real quickly, I'll give you my number three was the Young Bucks. Still the top act, of course, in Ring of Honor, and one that, you know, you think about it from a drawing standpoint, you know, if I'm looking at going to the card and they're not on it, I am probably more likely not to go. So that says something about how entertaining they are. And I think that they, even though they may not, you know, they're another act that doesn't need the belts. And I think it's cool that they have them now, certainly. But, you know, if you're, I think about how impressionable they can be. You know, if I'm a young kid and I'm watching their TV show and, you know, they're main eventing, that's a big deal. Like, oh man, TV this week, the Young Bucks are in the main event, you know, and they're always going to be in the main event on that show. They don't put them early. And I think that they have that buzz. And even though I've probably watched a lot of their matches this year, you know, still come across to me as one of my favorite acts in there too. And they have, haven't watched them in New Japan, just a little bit actually. But, you know, they got 2 years and showing everybody how you can make money and not be in the WWE machine. And certainly recommend everybody check out the article that Vice did on them. I thought that really painted Ring of Honor in a great light also. So
yeah, they I go hot and cold on the Bucks, but towards the end of this year, there's somebody I've kind of learned to embrace the gimmick with. And I really think the second half, you know, a lot of these guys we talked about, the second half of the year may have been slightly disappointing. I mean, I think overall, like, the last few months of the year kind of dipped in quality compared to what we saw in the first half. I'd say from, like, October, November, December onward, there just wasn't that depth. Well, really, from April to October, I think, was the peak. And then both sides, the beginning and the end of the year, we kind of had a little bit of more lulls. But the Young Bucks especially, I mean, they were somebody that were kind of, you know, not terrible, but meandering a bit in my eyes. And from the Ladder War to their matches at Bola weekend to their stuff throughout Ring of Honor to even their New Japan stuff, like the Ghostbusters tag from October, I think it's a lot of fun. So they really kind of rose up the ranks in the last few months.
Yeah, I really like their I mean, the Ladder War, it's going to be Ring of Honor's match of the year. I think it was at like 4.25 on it myself, which right around tops out with, well, 4.25, 4.5. And that's kind of where the ROH matches of the year kind of topped out for me, right around that group. So it certainly was a top five match. And I really liked the tag they did against Ospreay and Skrull too. And Ring of Honor, I think, was really smart to put that on TV. You know, they introduced these guys, the British guys, on Final Battle. And then, you know, you put this match, which is one of the best matches from the tour, one of their better matches of the year, right on TV to be like, hey, check these guys out, because you're going to see them on TV in a couple weeks. And so I thought that was really smart. I really liked that tag match. Yeah, it was a good match. Great match. Good, you know, fun finish. You've probably seen it in GIF form or whatnot. But they, I thought that tour was really good for Ring of Honor, actually. You talked about kind of a lull overall in the industry. I actually think that Ring of Honor finished the year really strong, actually, going into 2017.
Right.
So.
And then this week on the TV, they show extended clips of the Ladder War. So that's good too.
Oh, they do then. Okay, I hadn't seen they were. I know they're showing, you know, the best of kind of their pay per views and non televised matches. So it's always worth checking out. They'll give away some, you know, some good stuff. So cool. All right. So you're number two.
My number two, and I went really back and forth with these two guys. You probably know who they are.
Yeah, I mean, I know who your last two are.
I've been really faltering, but I'm ready to plunge forward. And my number two is Zack Sabre Jr.
Okay.
He's had more great matches in 2016 in my eyes than anybody. That's just the facts.
There you go.
I just thought he, I mean, I get the critique that maybe some of his matches go too long. Sometimes they look exhibitionary. But I've always kind of been someone that loves the journey. And I love his mat work, his arm work. And it's intriguing to me, even when it does kind of feel like when he's dicking around. And just his resume. And he's someone that I think when you look at all the places he's worked and all the matches he's done, whether it's NWXW, kind of teaming with Marty Scurll when he does that or on his own, whether it's in Progress, having the different matches there, Rev Pro, he had the excellent match with Michael Elgin, which I don't think many people have seen from the Sitting Board Spectacular. That was reviewed on This Week in Wrestling. Pete and Timothy turned me on to that match. And then the fantastic match with Jeff Cobb. The series with Chris Hero, they've had 2 4.5-star matches in my eyes. Stuff in PWG, he's now the PWG champion and worked there. And then also the little promotions. I mean, his stuff in Beyond with Jonathan Gresham, just fabulous stuff. The match versus Martin Stone from Atlanta Wrestling Entertainment, which you can watch on Periscope, was also, I think, a really well-done match. He's somebody that kind of comes in as your indie star, doesn't seem to have much of an ego and putting over talent. He's jobbed a lot to the likes of JT Dunn and, you know, Martin Stone and those types of kind of the guys, local guys for the promotions that they're working on. And he's someone that I think's been just spectacular in a variety of settings and actually showed more versatility than sometimes he gets credit for.
And I think a lot of people that are listening to this show probably saw him in the Cruiserweight Classic.
Yeah, and I'll actually defend that. Like, I never thought...
Okay.
I mean, I don't think he was... He didn't have a great match in the Cruiserweight Classic, but he did have that Gulak match, which I enjoyed a great deal. It was a sprint. His first round match versus Tyson Ducks was fine. And then you get into the kind of the final semifinal stuff where he faced Norm Dar, which I thought was fine. And then the match with Metallic, which certainly had some miscommunications, but I think they kind of worked around it. So while I didn't think he was spectacular by any means, I didn't see that as the blemish some others did.
Okay. Yeah, no, that's a great rec for Zack Sabre. And he's an interesting guy. So he moved to the States, but he, along with Kota Ibushi, is another guy that kind of rejected the WWE's contract offer. Right?
Yeah, so he rejected it, and it's kind of interesting to see where he'll end up. I mean, he's working Evolve in January versus Hero. I don't, you know, not in the WWE UK thing, so that kind of shows where his standing is with him. I don't know if he's doing the World of Sport thing. I'm not sure whether he is or not, but yeah, I look forward to seeing what he'll be involved with in 2017. I also want to mention the Cedric Alexander series. They had three matches. One was in PWX, one was in AAW, and one was in Evolve. And all three matches were different, but it also felt kind of like a cohesive trilogy. And all three matches I had at 4 stars or above. So that was, like, he just had those little, like, Sabre had a lot of those, like, mini feuds throughout the year. Like, he had it with Hero. He had three matches with Hero I had this year at 4 stars or above. He had that series with Alexander. He had a series with Johnny Gargano. Had a match in Evolve, had a match in AAW, both at 4 stars or above. Three match series with Gresham and beyond. So he has a lot of these kind of like mini feuds you don't think about, but really produced a lot of great stuff when you put it together as a whole.
Yeah, it's quite a resume of, you know, just, and look, Chad is not he doesn't throw the snowflakes around. So just to casually list off, you know, 24-star matches, you know, it's quite the output for Sabre. And actually, the only reason he didn't make my list was just because you just haven't seen a lot of them, and that's my own blind spot. I've seen him in PWG, but some of the other things, we just haven't jumped into him there. So certainly not a... Him not being on my list is not an indictment of him by any means. So the stuff I have seen has been really good. I thought the Trevor Lee match that you mentioned earlier was awesome. That was like 4.25 on that one, actually, myself. Really, really good match. So since we kind of flip-flop, because I gave my two the same time as you, let me do my one, and then we'll let you take it home. So my number one, would you like to guess?
I think it's got to be Will Ospreay by process of elimination.
It is Will Ospreay. Yeah. It is Young William, who is my number one, and you hit a lot of the high notes on that with him also at the start. So I think I've seen the Ricochet match and all the the purported synchronization and what they have in there and stuff, but I think that this guy. Boy, when he wants to, and I'm not saying he doesn't, and I haven't seen probably enough to say, but, I mean, when he wants to work like that injured limb and really be consistent, I mean, he'll mix in the high spot with it. I mean, he is fantastic. And I think that, you know, I think probably a complaint against him is that he's not always consistent with it. But I even thought, like in that first Kushida match, I thought his strikes were better than Kushida's were in that. And I thought that, in his Ring of Honor output so far, which I've seen everything of it, is, I thought that he worked his title win over Bobby Fish was very similar to the Kushida match in that he worked the injury. He sold the entire match, you know, got his, you know, his comebacks in, and then and won with the roll up. I thought it was a fan. It was like 3 3/4.
Yeah.
And but like the best 3 3/4 match, like just this is a great match. 3 3/4 there with that. I thought his match with Marty Scurll, which will give Scurll credit for in that match too, I thought that was a top 5 Ring of Honor match for the year when they traded the title. I was almost at 4.5 for that match. And this is in addition to, and then, you know, you talked about the sampler final battle. That's exactly what it was, right? You know, you're exposing, this is why people were initially upset that they didn't do Dragon Lee versus him, which you don't need to break that one out for a card that's already sold out and you already have like your top 3 matches. And they're going to do that match in March, which is smart when they go back to New York. You got to resell that building out again. I actually think that's a really good business move by them. Good booking decision.
Okay.
That was a great sampler to get to know him. And then, you know, and I talked about already, you know, they put the tag match up on free TV. And then he's going to have a match that I saw live, which was Kushida versus Dragon Lee versus Will Ospreay, which was as good as it sounds on paper. And it was a hell of a draw when they announced that one as the main event. There was no doubt that I was going down there through, you know, Christmas light massacres and whatever else, you know, at home. I was going down to see that fucking match. So, so he's my number one with that. And we talked about the Ricochet match, some of the other New Japan stuff. And I haven't seen the Bola stuff yet, actually. I'm holding out, you know, hopefully in the next couple weeks. But, you know, from a guy that – and the heel stuff sounds real interesting that you talked about earlier. And I did see and read some stuff about that too with him. And I do agree that from a charisma standpoint, there probably is something where other people are stronger. Like we talked about when we talked about Sammy Guevara, also they were kind of having a little bit more refined. But I do think that from what he brings, just from an excitement standpoint, he was my number one. So your number one, I know who it is, but you can go ahead and talk about Chris.
Yeah, Gilles. I mean, it kind of, again, I kept trying to think, like, you know, I kept trying to talk myself out of it. And just when you get to the people here and like my top five, I just, what felt the best for me, and it really felt like it was Chris Hero's year in a lot of regards. I mean, I don't think he had under a 3-star match the whole year that I've seen, and that's something that's incredible to think about. And he worked a variety of places or with a variety of opponents and was another person that was able to craft these interesting feuds, like versus Riddle. The series versus Riddle was great stuff. His two matches versus Hot Sauce Tracy Williams again and Evolve was excellent. Even stuff that kind of seems disappointing, like his stuff versus Gulak, you know, I ranked their match at Evolve 74 stars. It's like, you know, that's kind of like a throwaway hero match for the year and still something that, yeah, I thought was great. And I think the thing that I really want to put for Hero is his work in the tournaments this year, because in the Super Strong Style 16 and Progress, he worked a certain way versus Big Daddy Walter and Mark Andrews, and then versus Tommy Yen. He worked a certain way in that tournament. Then he worked the SCI and worked a different way. Had the match with Chip Day, Kyle Matthews, where he was doing some kind of world sport grappling, and they teased a 20-minute finish in a great fashion with the pin 1 second before the time limit, and then the four-way, which was an incredible match to be at live. So he worked that way, and then, like Jim Lineman, for AAW, he works a different way versus Matt Fitchett in a kind of bully type match, and then working later on to the final with Zack Sabre, another classic match there that is a match I really enjoy. It seems like some people are cold on that match, but I know me, Pete, and Timothy are big fans of that one for the finals of the Jim Lineman. Ted Petty, he worked as a complete bully, facing legitimate 15 and 17-year-old kids and beating them up in front of their parents. So that was interesting to see in some regard. And then at Bola, I mean, he essentially turned heel during Bola and works a different style there, has couple matches, you know, the Liger match, which on paper didn't go the way you think it would, and also the match versus Mark Andrews, which on paper didn't kind of go the way you think it would as well. So just great variety throughout the year, great opponents, great schedule, was put in a position to succeed and really did. And, you know, who knows, maybe, you know, I guess after AJ Styles, you can never say never. You know, I don't know what his future holds with WWE, but I am more optimistic than I was last year just because of what AJ did. I mean, AJ Styles was arguably the best wrestler of 2015. He was able to showcase that in WWE in 2016, so maybe Hero can do the same if he does indeed get signed and go there.
Great. Yeah, that was an interesting, you know, of course, and in between all that wrestling, he found time to talk to Parvin Allen and wants to be a reoccurring guest on Letters from Kayfabe. So, I mean, what a, you know, as I like to say, if I could ape triple, you know, how's your territory coming along, right? When Chris Hero is out tweeting, tagging Place to Be Nation about his appearance, are, you know, a fan of the show. So by proxy, I thank him for that. And of course, the great work that Parvin Allen does. So yeah, he's a cool guy. And I think that's a tough at the top for you. I know you really battled on that one. You know, Hero is a warranted popular pick for that. So I didn't know if you go with Sabre or not to kind of, to put him over even a little bit more. So,
yeah, they're very close. The Hero match versus ACH from Wrestle Circus, I think, helped a lot, because that was a match where a couple of times stuff didn't go quite as planned and could have went off the rails, and Hero really reined it in and worked his persona.
He really did. Yeah, he really did. That was I equated that to, like, an away game where he just went into, like, ACH's home Texas territory and just ramped up the bully stuff and played off the crowd with it, you know, and there were some marks in the crowd, like Pete, that was high-fiving him and shit, you know, but other than that, I thought that was a great kind of, you know, okay, this is how the crowd's going to be, and he really turned it on.
Yeah.
Really a feather in the cap on an amazing 2016, and that, yeah, we'll see where he ends up there. That was an initial, maybe a haphazard announcement, and I hope that didn't hurt him, but he does have, like you said, he's going to be in Evolve in January, so it'll be some more time to see him before, if he does go off to a role there with that. So, well, Chad, I appreciate your time. It was great getting together. I hope everybody out there listened to a good solid 2 hours of discussion here on some great things from 2016. You can find, you know, go out and seek these things out. Again, we talked about a lot of different podcasts where we maybe talked about them, so you can seek those out or the means to find them on YouTube and whatnot like that. So, Chad, any closing thoughts here as we start 2017?
No, I guess that is great to put a bow on the 2016 year. Great year in wrestling. But as I always say, I mean, beyond that, you know, I'm always thankful for Place to Be Nation, the content we provide, but more especially the friendships I've
absolutely
melded overall. So look forward to that always continuing, whether my wrestling wanes or not.
Yeah, and you know, and I could echo that, of course, too. And really, I found that with WWE kind of sliding off, we weren't the only ones. I mean, I know you probably watch it too, that kind of expanded out into other ways, just because, you know, we love wrestling and we like talking about it. And, you know, and there's so much out there. So I think that even as that shifts, and this is going to be a real interesting year, and I've become a lot more interested in even kind of the business side and the back office side and stuff like that. It's been, there's so much out there, and I'm certainly, grateful for the time that we could put in together too, and all those guys, and where I was going with that was even hobby wise. I found myself kind of centering in on, you know what, yeah, this is what I'm going to do. You know, we talked a little about the video gaming thing, but I'm kind of actually going to probably be hanging that up to try to be able to balance life a little bit better and put a lot more thought into. Because, you know, when you're in a zone, and you've seen it because you watched 1,900 matches this year that you track 3,000 overall. You know, the more you watch, the more, you know, an expert, but you know, they just that knowledge and base you have to talk about it. So rather than kind of thinning myself out there with that, I've been watching a lot more too, and hoping to watch a ton in 2017. So, but we'll be back in 2020 actually, in order to keep up the every 3 years here with that. Maybe you'll hear from us sooner Maybe we'll have, maybe we'll bring in that other young buck, Justin Rosero, sometime down the line. But, Chad, it was great talking to you, my friend. And we will see each other down the road. And thanks a lot, everybody. Take care.